Coming to you live, but not really. It is all pomp and no circumstance with Ryder Richards on LetUsThinkAboutIt.com, the amateur hour you should never tune into.
Hello and welcome back. This is Ryder Richards with Let Us Think About It. Now, this is a continuation from the last episode on the symbolic victory, and today we're going to get into how symbols create a mystery which drives us. And this can determine who we are and unify us, perhaps through violent sacrifice. But enough blabbering. This episode is a little bit more dense than usual, and I apologize in advance, but of course, only symbolically. Hoo-ah!
Part 5, Christianity, from holy to holy shit.
Okay, to really dig into the symbolic victory, let's look at Christianity. Now, we're going to do this through Slavoj Žižek, and he talks about Hegel. Christianity captures the essential failure of man himself, that is, of all humankind. Now, if your only way to achieve subjectivity is because of an inherent limitation, when a substance cannot achieve full identity with itself, well, that means that the self is blocked by some impossibility. An apparent agonism is at play here. Now, there is this gap between being human and achieving the transcendental or the ideal. That's kind of built into it. And Žižek says it is exactly that sort of slack or the gap between these two that leads to the subjectivity of the self, and this kind of striving that develops an identity for us. The point here is that the real limitations of our thoughts are also the limitations of being itself. So it's an impossibility of completely knowing the other and thereby completely knowing ourselves, right? If we can't know them, we can't know us, because essentially we cannot think it. Now, to think something is to know the thing, and yet, oddly, we cannot think God. He's always outside of us. He's necessarily a mystery to us. So we cannot completely know ourselves because we cannot know him. The gap between this full knowledge of the other as somehow full knowledge of the self is precisely or exactly the mystery that motivates us forward. So that is the symbolic unknowable, which cannot be attained. Well, this doesn't allow for a symbolic win because it's a symbolic mystery you can't achieve, right? But the mystery is what moves us forward. It drives us. Now, Žižek will go on. He says that this contradiction or limit, this impossibility, supplies the Christians with unity. So it's not clarity, it's mystery that drives us, right? And it goes something like this. So far as man could not overcome the distance between himself and God, only God could bridge that gap. So God took this, let's call it a failure, upon himself, and he sent his son down to be sacrificed, to be scapegoated. And this allowed him to function in the gap between our knowing and his unknowableness. Now, this symbolic enactment of Christ coming down had to somehow be real, though. It couldn't just be symbolic. It had to have real consequences, not just an abstract promise. So this is where God forsook himself. God alienated from God, fragmenting himself. Well, the point here is that we humans, we can't identify with being forsaken, with being alienated. This becomes our path or pathos to locate or identify, create identity for ourselves. And this is wallowing in the real. This is pain. This is misery. And this unification with Christ, this relatability, lets us unite with at least some aspect of the Father, the unknowable perfect, right? The Christ fragment of God, this version of himself, is the knowable part of the unknowable God. Now, in terms of symbolic victory, which we talked about last time, this mystery here is a pathological driving force, which is the necessity for, it's not really overcoming the filth of the world as we actually tend to think of the sacred, but it's actually identifying with the filth and alienation as a means to get closer to God. This is filth as necessary. Yeah, so the holy union is only possible by relating to the most distasteful aspects of humanity. Pain, sacrifice, fear, and torture. And this creates Christ as the unjust scapegoat. What this does for us is it fuels righteous indignation. This is power through anger, which unites people. First, let's consider the shape of all this, though, right? We've talked about the shape of conflict quite a bit. Let's talk about the shape and the math of what's happening here. So what happens is we see that God doubled himself. God is one, doubles himself, and part of himself is now a fragment, that is Christ. Now, the fragment and this doubling creates a distance in the one God, as he's now somehow two, yet still one, all simultaneously. And yet this odd little split, this fragmentation, we can actually consider this an antagonism between the two, this attempt to create distance, to separate, which, you know, oddly and confoundingly, does the exact opposite. So the one splits into two, providing a gap or space between, and this allows for our ability to relate to the mystery of God through the proxy of a different distance, suffering Christ. Or at least, maybe we can't relate to him completely, but we can get a little bit closer. We can finally have a foothold through this opposite other and through this gap that's created between them. So oddly, we need the profane to approach the sacred. It is through relating to pain and sacrifice, which are brought into the mystery, and that way we can all become one. So unity is attained by creating a chink in the monolith. Now, this is not necessarily the transparency of vulnerability, but this is an expression of the self into multiple selves having alternate experiences, and yet this ability to re-merge, to be reconstituted back into each other. Okay, on to the next part. Now, to take this need for the distasteful, the painful, and sordid, that is really our most filthy aspects as somehow necessary for unity. Ooh, right? This is kind of weird. But here we must cue somebody like Georges Bataille or Godard and their commentary on shit. Now, this is the holy nature of shit. It is to consume the structure and the values, to consume everything, only to have them clumped together and then excreted as an undifferentiated mound, to which, oddly enough, we can all uniformly relate with really no hierarchy of values here. And only from this really flattened out, stinky mass is growth possible. So this is taking everything and turning it into fertilizer. This is moving the sacred to the secular. Now in pop culture, let's reference the words of Andre 3000. I know you like to think your shit don't stink, but lean a little bit closer, see? Roses really smell like poo, 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 poo. And now, let's link all these ideas back to our notion of the symbolic doubling and non-duality, which we've been covering for so long. Now, this process is not making the one into two, keeping it all sacred and mysterious. This is not God doubled into Christ to unify us back into the mystery. Poop making is taking everything and reducing it all to one mess. Now, this is blunt. This is non-mysterious. It's non-motivational unification. Now, with something like God Christ, right, this kind of pairing here, the invitation into the indescribable, the transcendent, it inscribes us together. This is the holy mystery. Now, with shit, I suppose there's really no curiosity or mystery driving us here. It's more disgust and revulsion. But it's also kind of a dissolution of all values. And while filthy, nearly nihilistic, it somehow avoids the trappings and righteousness required by the sacred. And that means it avoids the traps. Now, Hegel brings up the Egyptians. He mentions that their secrets, or at least secrets to them, their mysteries, were not there to be resolved into some sort of deep insight, just as man cannot purify himself enough to unite with the unknowable, mysterious God. To solve the antinomy, I mean, classically, you're only allowed to ascend, right? To sublate, to approach the sacred, to gain insight. But for the Egyptians, these mysteries, now, if they were resolved, they would simply change the location of the mystery. Now, this is kind of curious, right? That means any mystery you solve just leads to more stranger, different mysteries. So solving anything only redoubles the mystery into a more profound mystery. And the more unthinkable, the more mysterious. Unless, of course, it somehow remains a first-order mystery, which is more like a riddle or a joke or something, right? Now, In all of this analysis, the very attempt to resolve the mystery is the point of our failure. So, yeah, let's think about this. Like, on an individual or personal note, in a Hegelian sense, your subjectivity is your attempt, and the failure is you. Your identity is not just the attempt to solve, but you are captured and bound into this mysterious other. You're captured up into this void. And this mystery here, this is kind of a vacuum, right? This is a gap that's in front of you. This is the space between two things and you're trying to transcend. And it becomes this driving force, but rather than thinking of it as pushing you from behind, it's more like a vacuum pulling you into the low pressure area in front of a sail. So you become the gap of your inability that's out in front of you. Your failure is your mystery. And yet the mystery was there way before you and was often shaped by forces beyond you. So that means that there is an other who shapes your motivations. And your failure, yeah, it mirrors that other's own.
Part 6. Bullshit.
So, you know, to pinch this off, using these ideas, we consider mimetic desire, scapegoating, and sacrifice, all from the last few episodes, as a type of symbolic victory. Sacrificing to win is really what we're talking about here. So what we have just said, though, is that humans need symbols and mystery to drive them on in a sort of Hegelian fashion. But in the Lacanian tradition, we would actually consider that drive our desire, which he says is how we know ourselves as a subject. So the mystery in front of you, the desires you pursue, it creates you as a subject. You essentially need a mystery to desire so that you can be you. Now, to solve the mystery or catch the sexy partner, if that's what you're chasing, is not to end the pursuit or the mystery. It's merely moving the mystery deeper into the more unthinkable or a more unattainable object. As we approach, it recedes. Now, mimetic desire tends to work because we don't see its mechanisms functioning on us. We don't realize our desires have been introduced by a hidden mechanism, some other, a subconscious, maybe a subliminal machine that starts us on this hedonic treadmill. Now, scapegoating works because our anger and jealousy, well, they're put into overdrive by a competition of wanting and not getting, of not getting, so we keep wanting, right? So this is all cybernetically channeled back into violence. Now, the steam valve of society is sanctioned murder. This is an extreme of filth that is somehow turned unifying, violence to prevent violence, and this is made sacred. This little mechanism here, the scapegoating, it provided us with Christ so that in theory we would never do it again. We're only unified here by dividing just from unjust, mystery from the noble. This is a tremendous reversal. This is somehow to be victorious through defeat, which is really a doozy of a symbolic reversal, and the Christians pulled it off excellently. But now, let's all tie this back to the last episode, and I've tried to do this repeatedly, right? Just keep cycling through these ideas. Now, economically and politically, our society primarily has our material conditions met. So that meant that we moved into the symbolic, the abstract, for stability, even though it's not always smoothly functional, and it's highly manipulable. It is precisely this leap from the real into the symbolic that provides stability. Because as the real collapses around you, you can still claim permanence. And that's a tremendous boon in uncertain times. Now, once again, let's look to the Egyptians and their claims to permanence, which were attempted through the excesses of material reality. Now, Georges Bataille discusses this idea of sacrifice as the excesses of civilization that must be squandered. The excess must be wasted to keep a civilization level. So funeral rites and the hygiene of war, this is both state and religious expansion. It ends up looking like extravagance on all fronts. And Bataille says this is necessary. So these sacrifices, they're real, but they're grounded in the actions taken. So the squandering, in the form of death and destruction, or maybe it's in opulence, such as in massive churches and tombs. Yet all these actions are obviously instantiated by symbolic and social prevarications. They stem from the symbolic, right? So this is real production from production of the real. Now, obviously, we know our reality is shaped by the symbolic. We're not trying to argue that. But the problem is, as we increasingly believe the symbolic is real, it becomes more powerfully effective. And yet, those accustomed to this only symbolic reality, they can tend to neglect the really real, right? And this means that they reverse the relationship, increasing the order of the simulacra from Baudrillard, right? We shun the real shit and believe the bullshit. And now, once again, for those of you aware of Bataille, he loves shit, right? Always reminding us of the undifferentiated mass. It's the only way to grow something. And you can't have the rose unless you have the shit that it grows from. So what I'm saying here is it's necessary to muck about, to go through shit, taking your experiences and problems and mashing them up, leveling them, grounding them into some sort of secular fuel. Now, this highlights the symbolic or the simulacra's deceptive promise, which is to avoid the real, but somehow still have the results, the rose. Bluntly, it's easier to manipulate symbols than reality, and the game of social standing can very easily become all about symbolic gamesmanship. This is signaling without a signifier, leading us to forget the very real individuals we scapegoat and sacrifice to win. All right, thank you very much. This one might have been a bit much, but it was also kind of fun to stitch together. I don't usually do them this densely or shittily. And there are obvious contradictions here and gaps really would need to be explained and filled in. But perhaps you can just take it all in stride as something to contemplate. The idea of God split into two to unify us to his mystery, while somehow shit takes more than two and reduces it to an unholy mess from which we can only rise. Now, the beauty of the poop pile is in its somewhat materialist, naturalist, or maybe even eminently grounded nature. It pushes back against religion as this kind of monolithic, unattainable mystery, this transcendent idealism. So, yeah, anyway, if you liked the show, please take a moment to rate and review, to share the podcast. Currently, I'm removing the donation option from the website because it's not doing much good, and I really think I was only doing it for memetic reasons anyway. But I do still have videos of the podcast and written episodes on letusthinkaboutit.com, if that's what you prefer. Now, all the best, and perhaps just live a little more shittily this next week.